Can you listen to that music and not think about shipwrecks? I can't. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We'll be taking a look at Great Lakes shipwrecks today and sort of, I would think, a Great Lakes maritime history a bit with our guest, John Odin Jensen. John's a professional historian. He's a maritime archaeologist. He's participated in investigations of more than 50 marine archaeological sites around Wisconsin. He's written extensively on the Midwest's maritime history and archaeology, and he's currently on the faculty of the Department of History at the University of West Florida. His new book is called Stories from the Wreckage, A Great Lakes Maritime History Inspired by Shipwrecks. So what intrigues you about shipwrecks? Do you live near the Great Lake of Michigan or the Great Lake of Superior? What wrecks have you seen, maybe? What do you want to know about the history of the Great Lakes in terms of its merit? All the schooners and ships that sailed and floated on those Great Lakes over the years. John's put together a really interesting book here, and I hope you'll join in with your comments and conversations. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. John Jensen, welcome.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. Well, how you have a very interesting maritime career here. Tell us about your career.
It's a long, strange trip here. But,
yeah, it is.
You know, my book is about the study of shipwrecks, but I started learning about those in Alaska. I come from many generations of for Scandinavian and Scandinavian-American fishermen and mariners. And my dad decided when I was just before my 10th birthday that it was time to go to work. And so I spent my early years fishing king crab and shrimp and all the other things. And that's how I got started in all of this stuff.
That was not easy work either, just as an aside.
Yeah, but when you're 10 years old, you don't know any better. And I think that's really the case for much of the maritime story. It seems right at the time.
Well, it does to me as well. So what is it about shipwrecks then that draws you to them?
I mean, I'm drawn to them probably for different reasons than a lot of folks. But a shipwreck to me is, I mean, it's not the most important thing about a ship, but it is a really key moment in time. It's a memorial for the people, not just who died in wrecks, but who were, you know, working hard to, I mean, really creating our history. And so, and because I have some personal experience with shipwrecks, anytime I read about one or start studying one, I can see the human side of this story in a lot of ways. And there's just always many stories for every wreck.
And certainly there are a lot of human, wonderful stories in your book about the people.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, they're great stories, sometimes inspiring, sometimes not.
Yeah, instructive.
Instructive. Well, so I think it was an interesting approach to take the history of the region and sort of block it in with shipwrecks and use shipwrecks as kind of the underpinnings, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're sort of the kind of the foundations, and some of this goes back years ago when I was lucky enough to end up working for the Wisconsin Historical Society when they were starting their underwater archaeology program, maritime preservation, in which in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, that some people didn't really understand why that was so important, but I ended up being part of that, and that is just, I mean, it was the foundation of my career. But the shipwreck, at the time, the shipwrecks were being looked at as, you know, it was the wreck. Actually, if I go back a couple of more years, my first times on the Great Lakes, I was working for the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee in the summer.
Yeah.
Ended up being a relief engineer alongside a pretty famous shipwreck hunter, the guy who found the Rouse Simmons. And I had no idea I was going to have a career in this. But what struck me when I was working with the other captain, who was from Beaver Island, was that they kind of looked at me funny. I'm this guy from Alaska. I'm the saltwater guy.
Yeah.
And they seem to do things different. And so I had to figure that stuff out. And it turns out that they just, you know, maybe it was different for them, but for the great-grandfathers, they didn't think about it the same way these people did. This really still is part of the kind of the larger ocean story. And that's sort of it's the foundations of it all.
You know, it's really interesting to me, and I haven't thought about it in this way. I mean, I knew about specific ships and so forth over the years, but I learned a lot in your discussions and how the ships of the time there were different sort of eras for mm-hmm. the ships. The earlier ones weren't dragging coal and grain or whatever around, but they were dragging people from the east to the west.
They were dragging people. They were carrying just about everything.
And yeah.
These, you know, it is these different eras. And one of the points that comes out in this book, which is built on the work of just dozens and dozens of people, one of the things that's really clear, we're used to thinking about Wisconsin as a frontier and Frederick Jackson Turner and all of that.
Yeah.
But in the frontier story, because of when it was written, later elaborations of it, the water part is really left out. And yet when you think about it and you look at the Wisconsin state flag, there's a mariner in there, a saltwater
yeah.
mariner. And so this maritime story of the frontier, or frontiers as it is in my book, is really important. And I think the shipwrecks help us get back to that era that was so important at the time but seemed to disappear when we were, you know, thinking about industrialization and,
yeah.
and farms. And it was sort yeah. of easy to forget something that had been central to the whole Wisconsin and Midwest regional story.
Yeah, and development, you bet. Well, we have callers online with questions. I want to give you a chance to join in. If you have a question for our guest today, John Jensen, his book is called Stories from the Wreckage, A Great Lakes Maritime History Inspired by Shipwrecks. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Todd in Janesville has something for us, so let's go there. Hi, Todd. Thanks for calling.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on the show. I think that I just want to let people know, up in the Bayfield area, there's a great maritime museum right down by the Coast Guard station. And they have really good volunteers that kind of walk you through it. They have a really good the story on Edmund Fitzgerald. And then there's a cruise line that takes you, you can go around the Apostle Islands, and they tell you the history of a lot of the ships that have gone down in that area. A lot of them come into harbor. There's Long Island that ships used to come into and still do to get out of storms right off of Madeline Island. And there's a lot of ships, the wooden hull ones that you can see from the surface. So if people up in the area, just stop in the Maritime Museum, and then they can really good volunteers that work at the place, and they can enjoy some of the shipwrecks that are up there.
Yeah,
that's great, Todd. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, what people should know about your region is if you want to see shipwrecks, and you're not a diver, and most of us aren't, I still do a little bit, but you can see the wrecks from kayaks, you can swim over them, and if you just kind of want to experience the Great Lakes, as people did in the period that I'm talking about in the books, because we still experience it that way, Apostle Islands area in Bayfield, it's one of the best places you could possibly go.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm wondering, you know, I was thinking about how you researched, and you mentioned that there were a lot of people that you kind of would almost want to thank for your information for the book in some ways, but did the maritime museums around the state, did they play a role at all?
Oh, they did. And I think I'm the author on this book, and I'm certainly responsible for the interpretation and the content. But the fundamental research, the archaeological research, the parts and pieces that were created over nearly 30 years is a product of the Wisconsin Historical Society, its partners, underwater groups, the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeological Association.
Yeah.
These are amateurs who have stepped up to really care about this. And again, Wisconsin is really unique in the United States on having this consistent, workmanlike yet cutting edge program on maritime heritage and underwater archaeology. And this is for me was my chance to, you know, to pull it together on behalf of the Historical Society and put these crazy ideas that I've thought about. But it couldn't have been done without literally dozens of people. And state agencies, and it's really difficult to put it all in there. And I try to put as much as I can in the rather extensive set of acknowledgments.
Todd, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Michael in Elroy, Wisconsin next. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Great topic. I heard your lead-in, and my memory was jogged by an article I read about a search for a ship, I believe called the Griffin, which was built and used by one of the early European explorers, and I think it sank in Lake Michigan. Can you flesh out my poor memory, please?
Well, I would be happy to. I mean, I have never gone looking for it, but it is LaSalle's Griffin, and it's credited as being the first Atlantic-style European ship built on the Great Lakes. And, one of the things about LaSalle, he was smart enough to get it built, but he didn't get on it. And so it's kind of in question where it ended up. It's been, if you took all the pieces of that vessel that have claimed to have been found, it would rival the True Cross in Israel. It did leave the Mackinac area and didn't end up where it was supposed to be. And perhaps it's been found or not, but it's a great mystery, and it is a first moment in the lakes. But what a lot of people don't realize, you jump into the 19th century, where I'm looking at, where there's so many ships, there's a big space in between and things before that where shipwrecks come into play. Native American lake farers, dugout canoes, birch bark canoes. There's a whole indigenous tradition that needs to be looked at more closely that, of course, those people do remember. It's a key ship in the kind of big pantheon of Great Lakes history.
And thank you so much for calling, Michael. Appreciate it. And maybe go a little further and talk more about the time period that you're dealing with.
Yeah, the time period in this book really is focused on really about 1800, truly about 1820 to 25, to the early part of the 20th century. And that takes us from the frontier, as we think about it, sort of the early settlement by Euro-Americans, U.S. and British moving west, and it picks up after about 1825, because of course that's the year the Erie Canal is completed, and we can look at the number of people moving west and starting to build ships in large numbers. These are quite innovative, amazing ships. Ships that building steamers in 1844 that were larger than anything that you would ever see in New York or London. And then it carries on up through the 19th century as all this expands, and then it moves into as we start to industrialize and create these vessels that looked like the Edmund Fitzgerald. She's built in 1958, but her physical style is something that is in place by the late 1860s.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's no place else like this, I mean, it is something else. So the numbers of people working out on the lake, the numbers, absolute numbers of ships, not tons of ships, peaks in the 1870s and 1880s, and so it was a huge social community, and then of course 80s, 90s, ships start to sink, bigger ships appear, and by about 1920 or so is when I tail off. The Frank O'Connor, which sinks off of Door County, built in 1892, but sinks in 1919, is sort of my end point in the story. The lakes are more important than ever economically, but as a direct contributor to shaping our communities and our history, it peters out by that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, I want to let you join in. I know we have Kathy and Hayward coming up next, but there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org, and we'll get to Kathy and Hayward after I remind you our guest today is John Jensen. His book is titled Stories from the Wreckage, A Great Lakes Maritime History Inspired by Shipwrecks. Larry Mueller here, Tyler Dinner, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the maritime history of the Great Lakes today, or at least a significant portion of time, and the shipwrecks that sort of mark that time period with our guest, John Jensen, author of Stories from the Wreckage, A Great Lakes Maritime History Inspired by Shipwrecks. And it's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. They do a wonderful job, and it's great to have him with us. You can join at 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. Kathy from Hayward, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, John, and congratulations on your completion of your book.
Thank you, Kathy.
I'm a retired elementary school teacher, and I've had this question since my kids were little. We traveled the circle tour around Lake Superior, and I stopped everywhere I could to see if there were books written at more of a children's level, because kids love shipwrecks. And I'm just wondering, in all of your research, have you ever come upon books geared more for kids?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you asked, because, I mean, it's a really difficult topic to write about, you know, in some ways for kids, because you don't want to turn them into comic books. But the Wisconsin Historical Society has produced at least two, working on the water, and it had shipwrecks, but it was embedded in the larger story of Wisconsin and water that I'm talking about here. And I really recommend that. And the nice thing is that book became part of the fourth grade Wisconsin history curriculum.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's still, again, it's the only state I know about that actually has produced a book that is suitable for kids that is actually part of the state history curriculum. So that's one that I can, you know, that I can really recommend. There are some books not on the Great Lakes that are pretty interesting, you know, out of Maine, and my mind is kind of slipping on that a little bit, but this Working on the Water, and I think there's one other that are really good, and I think we need more.
And one that I could highly recommend, it was written by Michael Kottman. He actually wrote two books, one for adults and the other aimed at kids or younger readers, and the title of the book was Shackles from the Deep: Tracing the Path of a Sunken Slave Ship, a Bitter Past, a Rich Legacy. And that was, to me, was a really, really interesting book. And I read both the adult edition and the young people's edition, and was entranced by both of them, and talking about that time period and the slave ship that they found.
Yeah. One more that comes to mind is David McCauley's Ship. And it is, again, an adult can read it or a kid can learn from it. And it really gets you through that process of analyzing, you know, evidence and getting to the story. So that's another really great one.
And Kathy, thank you so much. I hope that helps. Let's go to Riley and Gill's Rock next. Hi, Riley.
Hi, Larry. I really appreciate what you guys are doing here on the show. Just wanted to talk about Gill's Rock, Door County, little comment on how wonderful, or not necessarily wonderful, but the shipwrecks here are quite amazing. I enjoy free diving them, and I sail a wooden schooner around this area. And if anybody ever wants to come up here, it's some good shipwrecks.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're not going to argue about that, though, are you, John?
No, I'm not going to argue about that. And, you know, that's, you know, where we really started our research. The first state underwater archaeologist was from Door County, and we were working in Death's Door and off Plum Island, and it is a maritime historical extravaganza, and it's beautiful. And again, it's like Bayfield and the Apostle Islands. It's a place where you can really experience the feeling of being on a ship the way people did in the past. So yeah, it's a great place.
Yeah, absolutely, and it comes into play in your book.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that about when you think about Door County, and it came up the other night, I was in Sturgeon Bay, is you know, the maritime history of the Great Lakes, and certainly of parts of Wisconsin. Is you know, it has some really important ethnic elements in different places, and so my middle name is Odin, the last name is Jensen, and that's about as Norwegian as it gets. And when I found myself working in this area and then going around Door County, it was the same immigration stream that sent my relatives to Alaska to pursue maritime opportunities, came here to Wisconsin, to places like that. So Door County has a lot to offer. And, of course, there's, you know, important – I mean, all wrecks in my mind are important, to tell you the truth. But some ones that figure in the book, the Frank O'Connor off of Kane Island and all that, are just – they're really world-class experiences, aside from the history.
And thank you very much again for calling. Really appreciate it. Gene in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Gene.
Yeah, some years ago there was a radio personality in our city who was mainly on commercial radio, but I think spent some time on public radio. Last name, I think, was Davenport, who did a book on shipwrecks of the Great Lakes, if my memory is correct.
And your memory is correct, and I interviewed him. Oh, now I'm trying to remember when it was. It was quite a while back. But you probably looked through many of those books, John, as you were.
Oh yeah, I mean, but I have, and I can almost pull that one up in my mind. But one of the things that I think. Is different about this book and some of the other things coming through the historical societies. We were able to build on those earlier efforts, but being for me being an outsider coming in and initially being a 22-year-old ex-crab fisherman off a shipwreck who ends up at Lawrence University in January trying to figure out where am I the Atlantic story of this, the ocean story of it, its connections to this bigger maritime system, to national maritime history, that, you know, is in the peripheries of some of the other books. I mean, it's there, but it's not front and center. And I think that's something that looking at the shipwrecks, just not one shipwreck, but many, these kind of stories really, really pop out. So this book isn't a history of shipwrecks. It's got shipwrecks in it. It is the history inspired by shipwrecks, taking that next step. And so that's what's a little different here.
Gene, thank you so much for calling. Again, you can join in with your questions as we move along here. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Let's talk a little bit about what were the ships like, those early ships that brought people from New York and wherever to Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, there were many, but the ones that I think you're referring to, Larry, are what are called, the palace steamers.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's interesting, again, when you look at all of the Wisconsin shipwrecks we know of, it's close to 700 of them, and you break it up and you realize the things that we have some of the earliest wrecks on are steamboats, because they're actually more important for kind of the city formation than all these sailing vessels. And so these palace steamers, first steamboat that makes money is Fulton in the East Coast, but he's thinking about the West because, the East Coast doesn't have the timber to feed into those furnaces, and people moved to the Midwest for a variety of reasons. So the palace steamers that they started building in the 1921, but really takes off in the 1830s. They were luxurious. They were the cutting edge of maritime technology, and they were really designed for this maritime frontier that's oceanic. And then they got bigger, and the speed that they got bigger is really kind of mind-blowing. The early ones are 130 feet long, and then by 1844, 260 feet long, more than 1,000 tons. By 1855, they're more than 300 feet long, and they're going 20 knots.
Yeah.
That kind of expansion is just is unbelievable. But it was one of the foundations of this region. Very much tied into railroads and all of that too, but. Luxurious, dangerous.
Danger. I was going to bring up the dangerous part of it because you're throwing, you got a big fire going on within the furnace of those steam engines, right?
Yeah, you got a big fire going on, and you have a lot of wooden superstructure, and you've got a lot of paint, and you've got then bright work, and you have oil lamps, and people smoking cigars, and all sorts of things. And so, fire was a real major threat. And of course, Wisconsin, we have there's a number of fires, large and small. The Phoenix, of course, off of Sheboygan, perhaps the most famous and most deadly. The Niagara, which fits in my book in a big way. It was a real threat and something that happened a lot.
Frank O'Connor.
Frank O'Connor, yep, absolutely.
You talk about, I know you wrote about that, and that one burned off Door County.
Yeah, Door County, yeah. And that was a you know, a bulk carrier at a different time, but the same kind of thing. It's yeah. Wood, and it's you have a lot of combustibles. It takes a little bit to get them going, but once they go, they go.
They go in a hurry. Well, Tim and Ellsworth, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, a lot of times, oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A lot of times when I'm agate hunting on the North Shore, I find little pieces of pottery or little broken dishes pieces that you can tell are old and have been washed around. And I've always wondered where they come from. In the back of my mind, I thought, is this from an old shipwreck or just stuff that gets thrown in the lake?
But, well, it sort of depends, but it certainly can be stuff from old shipwrecks. And, on the North Shore, that's possible. Things that often show up are pieces of timber or spikes, things that are really durable that come off of, off of the ships. If things are washing ashore, it often means that they're maybe something, pieces that are offshore that are fairly close by, that when the storms churn things up, it comes in. And specifically what ship and what time period, you'd have to look at the place and look at the material culture. But it's absolutely possible. We find fragments of wrecks, all around places in the Great Lakes.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Tim. Donna in Western Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Donna.
Well, hello. West Dunn, Wisconsin. That's in the middle.
Oh, okay.
just FYI. But I was very interested in these shipwrecks in Lake Superior. We were given a gift of a big cutting board, and it's a couple inches thick. The wood never gets cut by the knife, and it was from the ships sunken down in there, and they were harvested from them. So I'm just wondering, what kind of a business is that from those ships that does that? It always kind of confused me. I thought maybe you could bring some light to that.
Well, without knowing the specific details on when you got it and all that, but if it's since 1987 and they are quote unquote harvesting wood off of shipwrecks and selling it, it's an illegal business, because that's against the law. I mean, these shipwrecks are cultural heritage that belongs to everybody. Now, stuff from before that, it was a different time period.
Yeah.
There's a real 20th century history of diving and shipwreck exploration that's important in its own right. And in that period, it was people found stuff, they wanted to share it. It was a different time, but as we got to know more and laws changed, the wrecks, the historic wrecks are protected. But with that, there have been some bad actors, this selling ideas of finding treasure, whether it's sunken logs or discarded ships. And if you have a cutting board that works, that's a great thing. And keep it as a good treasure, and then it's a good thing.
I remember in your book you were writing one experience where a guy found a shipwreck and then went out and had somebody guard with a rifle while he went down and brought up dishware and all kinds of things.
Yeah, that's the story, and I'm not going to comment on the specific wreck at the moment here, but the stories that I got from other divers, again, it was the 1960s, and scuba was a pretty new thing, and it was a finder's keeper's era. And they found it was the Niagara. Okay, I'll say it. It's in there. And it, burned in 1856, 230-foot, palace steamer. And, there was a lot of things on there. And, fires look like they destroy everything, but they're oftentimes the archaeologist's friend. But anyway, divers found it, and, cleaned it out. So the story is that it was, a guy standing guard there with a high-powered rifle, until he got his stuff out of it.
So there you go, Donna. Thank you again so much for calling. Tamara emailed with some suggestions for children's books. She's with the Wisconsin Historical Society and did some of the photos for your book, John. So Maritime Books for Kids from the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, and that goes back to one of our earlier callers who had questions. One is titled Great Lakes, Great Ships, A Maritime History, and Kathy Green and others wrote that particular book. And the new book is titled Sport, Ship Dog of the Great Lakes.
Oh, and that is a great book. I have seen that. It just came out, and I actually had written a children's book on dogs at sea years ago, and this is just it's a delightful book. And Kathy's book on Great Lakes, Great Ships, that was the other one that I just couldn't pull up into my mind. So those are good ones, and I can't say enough about Tamara and her photographs. She did the photographs.
Oh, they're beautiful.
I mean, they are absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, they're absolutely gorgeous. Tamara, thanks for that. Let's talk about some of the other eras here. We moved people from the East to the Midwest, but then industry sort of came into play, did it not?
I did, and it's sort of not all at once, but it's very pronounced. You know, you have exploration for copper and then iron, you know, by the mid-century. And then after the Civil War, it takes off. The nation is industrializing. You have to get those industrial products. And wood was, of course, the first great industrial product around here. And more shipwrecks were carrying wood than anything else. But as the demand for industrial products grew, the ships changed, and a lot of things changed with that. I mean, they came up with new designs, but you know, if you still had an old ship, you still needed to make money with it. And so it set up a dynamic that was really contributed to a lot of shipwrecks. And the people that were working in that period had some pretty hard times. If you think about the hard hand of industry on land, it was going on at sea as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they'd pack those ships with timbers, and sometimes they'd put them up on top of the deck even just to get enough in there, I imagine, to make a better profit or to make a profit.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff they were stacking, I mean, those ships were designed for that. And that's part of the thing. As these industries grow, the ships become more specialized. And there's so much, you know, Midwestern /American ingenuity in developing these variations of ships that carry that cargo. But, you know, you push it to the edge and things, you know, things will happen.
And it was timber and it was grain.
Yeah, it was iron, and of course coming back, and people, and this is true throughout a lot of North America, you know, we're used to thinking about energy and oil and all that, but coal was the great industrial fuel, and the amount of coal that needed to be brought into places along the Great Lakes was enormous, and so that was the great thing that was coming back. Stone, there's a whole all sorts of things, but grain, wood, you know, iron ore, coal, these are really, really big industrial products.
And so a ship would maybe take coal from east to west and then carry something else back.
I mean, coal would come in from the east, and typically you didn't make as much money off of that, but it certainly paid the bills. But the big money for these industrial ships carrying iron ore and contributing to the shipwrecks and all that was, you know, carrying iron or grain from that west to east. And there was, of course, more flow in that direction. You know, you're picking up the natural resources of this, for want of a better word, you know, frontier region.
Yeah, absolutely. John in Middleton, your turn. Hi, John.
Oh. I was reviewing some 8mm movies that my grandfather took in the 1940s off the shore of, the North Shore of Kenosha. One day he found the movies show about a keel exposed about maybe 15 feet long with full set of ribs. The next day it was gone. What's the chance that wood would still be there and is worth looking for?
I mean, chances are, unless there has been shoreline development there or something like that, the chances are great that it's there and it's in pretty good shape. And especially with wreckage that is, you know, is buried by sand, and there's quite a number of those. And when those do get exposed, and it's usually temporarily, the preservation on the wood is phenomenal. I mean, literally, centuries, millennia. I mean, there are places where the conditions are right with shipwrecks, the Black Sea, and places that they're finding really intact wrecks that are, 2,000-3,000 years old. And
wow.
Whereas all of the wrecks sitting up off the bottom of the Great Lakes won't do that. There are areas and resources like you're talking about that, I mean, it really can be there for a long time, indefinitely.
Yeah, interesting. John, thanks a lot. And thinking about that, those that didn't sink, I was surprised at how you mentioned somewhere in the book about the longevity of some of those ships.
Yeah, I mean, that is...
It amazed me.
And it was a shocking thing to me when I came down here, to the Great Lakes, was how, they developed the modern industrial vessel. Initially, it's wood, but they're building them out of steel by the 1890s. And there were vessels that are, the hulls, some of them are still in use, but they're over 100 years old doing the same thing. They were so effective. And again, with slight adaptations and all that, but I only know of one other case of working ships in the world that have, vessels that are effective, money-making producers, for more than a century.
Yeah, that absolutely amazed me when I read that. That was astonishing to me. Well, I know you've got your launch.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Sure.
Speaking of launching,
which I hope it won't turn into a wrecking. launching is the first part of the step. But the Wisconsin Historical Society State Museum on the Square has a temporary exhibition on shipwrecks, and again, this book is really a product of the Historical Society. I can get the credit because I wrote that part, but it is this collective effort, and so we're having a launch for the book at 6 o'clock at the State Museum, and I will tell some stories that some I told here, but more that I kept in my back pocket, and hope to meet people and be there to answer any kinds of questions.
Yeah, and when it's
at 6 o'clock on Wednesday at the State Museum up on the Capitol Square.
And Wednesday is May 1st.
May 1st, May Day.
May Day. We're going to, and hopefully there won't be any May Day. when you're there, I know there won't be. I tell you, the book, you look at the photography and the maps and the drawings, artist drawings. I mean, you really found some wonderful things in this book.
Yeah, and I can't say enough about the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And it is. Can't talk about the text, but it's a beautiful book because of the work they put into it. It's really, I'm very proud of it and proud of those guys.
And we've covered, I would think, about 1/1000th of 1% of what you got in here, John. So there's a lot more for people to read about and see. And I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry, and thanks to the callers. It was a real pleasure and an honor.
pleasure to have you with us. John Odin Jensen. He is the author. Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N. He's not one of those S-O-N guys. But his book, published by Historical Society of Wisconsin Press, is titled Stories from the Wreckage, A Great Lakes Maritime History Inspired by Shipwrecks. Fun and interesting reading, and I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy taking a look at it. Pleasure to have him along. Well, coming up, we're going to be shifting gears entirely and take a little look at foster care and helping siblings in foster care. That's one of the big problems facing children in foster care, being separated from a sibling. And we'll be talking about that next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.